Hello, this is Eddie Duke. Welcome to the weekly podcast at Panther Creek Baptist Church. You know, Jesus Christ is an amazing person. As I look at our culture today, I'm convinced the absolute only hope for this world in which we live is Jesus Christ. And every week, I will introduce you to messages that will communicate this hope that we have in Christ. I'm thankful that you've taken the time to catch us here this week. It means a lot to me that you would tune in, and I would love to hear from you. And now, here is this week's broadcast. Today, we're concluding our series that we've looked at and talked about, and the series that we've been talking about is, how would Jesus do it? And I realize that we started this on June 1st, so we've come a long way in not too long of a time, but really looking at every week on how would Jesus do this? How would Jesus live? Because we said, you know what? The lifestyle, when we adapt our lives to following Jesus, our life looks a lot different than maybe sometimes how we live it. And so the last question that I want to look at today, I borrowed from Charles Colson. Chuck Colson, when he was still alive, wrote a book called How Now Shall We Live? And actually, he turned this into a study series that I thought might be good sometime for discipleship training because it talks about a Christian worldview and how to live with a Christian worldview in light of the world that doesn't live with a Christian worldview. And so, how now shall we live? It's a great question, and if you've ever gone to Matthew 24, you know what we're looking at. You know what we're talking about. We were talking about the time that Jesus returns. So in light of His return, how really shall we be living? And so like I said, today we are going to wrap up this series that we've been looking at. Next week, we're going to start we're just going to hang out together, if that's okay, because we may look at things that we don't normally get a chance to look at, but not really series. There's no series starting until October 27th. October 27th, I've been praying about this. I'm very excited about it. But October 27th, guess what? I'm starting my Christmas series for 2019. You say, Eddie, you're starting before Halloween. I know. Christmas gets earlier in every year, but there's a reason for me doing that. Number one, I really like Christmas, and I want to start it. So, number two, we are going to have a very busy December. Things are going to be awesome in December. There's going to be a lot that we're going to be doing in the month of December. As a matter of fact, my sermon series on Christmas will wrap up December 8th in a service that we're going to have over at the Christian Life Center, and more information will be coming about that soon. But we're going to start October 27th, so you want to make sure you set your calendars because it's going to be really, really good, and I'm looking forward to it. But today, let's finish up this sermon series by looking at Matthew 24, beginning with verse 36. Begin with verse 36. It says, "Now concerning that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, except the Father alone." Verse 37, "As the days of Noah were, so the coming of the Son of Man will be. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah boarded the ark." Now it's interesting, when Jesus mentioned these four things, eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, He's talking about partying. He's talking about the occasions when people party, you know, and that's what they were doing in the days before Noah. I mean, they were just having a good time, not even thinking about that flood's going to come. You know, they had known this for a long time, but not even thinking about it. He said, you know what, that's like how we are in a lot of ways. You know, we're just not even thinking about Jesus Christ coming again. You know, we joke about it. We joke about the people who predicted it, and it didn't happen. And so we talk about this often enough. People think, it's never going to happen. But that's exactly how it was in the days of Noah as well. Verse 39 says, "They didn't know until the flood came and swept them all away. This is the way the coming of the Son of Man will be. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding grain with a handmill. One will be taken and one left." Verse 42, "Therefore, be alert, be ready, since you don't know what day your Lord is coming. But know this, if the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed alert and not let his house be broken into. This is why you're also to be ready, because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." As we continue to look at Matthew chapter 24, verse 44, I heard about a young man who was a seminary student years ago who was going to Southern. He was from the South, you know, and down here, we We know religious terms, we know church language pretty well, but in some areas of the country, they don't know this as well. Like in Michigan, for instance, for the school that summer, he was going to go on a mission trip to Michigan, and he was so excited about this. He was so excited to go and share with folks, you know, what he knew from seminary, and so he made arrangements and went up there that first week, and they assigned him on his mission journey. They assigned him to go door to door and share the gospel. And so he went up to the first door so excited. And there sitting on the front porch was an elderly man, was an older gentleman. And he went up to him and he said, "Sir, I got a question for you." He said, "Are you a Christian?" And the older gentleman said, "No, we're the Smiths. The Christians live about two blocks down on the other street." And he said, No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, are you lost?" And he said, "No, son." He said, "We've been here for 25 years. I'm not lost." And the guy by this time is getting kind of frustrated. He said, "No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking about the judgment day. Are you ready for the judgment day?" And this older man looked at him. He said, "Well, when's it going to be?" He said, "Well, it's either going to be today or tomorrow." And the older gentleman looked at him. He said, "Oh, great. My wife will probably want to go both days." You know, there's a lot of confusion when it comes to the judgment day. There's a lot of confusion then when it comes to Jesus Christ coming again. And we've talked about this for a long time now. We've talked about it for so long that people who aren't Christian, people who don't go to church, they've begun to make jokes about it. You know, they say, "Oh, man, those Christians are just crazy." Well, in a lot of ways, that may be true, but it doesn't change the truth of Jesus Christ coming again. But there are people who haven't helped that cause very much. There are people who may be a little weird or strange who are going and telling folks, "Hey, I know that Jesus Christ is coming again, and he's coming on this date." The last one I remember doing this was a gentleman by the name of Harold Camping. Now, Harold Camping in 2011 had a radio program, a Christian radio program, in which he broadcast ways to study the Bible, and he talked about Bible studies and other things like that. But one day in 2011, he decided that he knew when Jesus Christ was coming again, and he told everybody on his radio broadcast that this is the date that Jesus Christ is coming. Well, that day came, and that day went. And the very next day around California, there were billboards that people put up that looked like this. Somebody put up these billboards and it said this. That was awkward. And they meant was, okay, you know, that didn't happen. Jesus Christ didn't come again, so it's kind of awkward. And then they put a verse right after that that said this. And it's quoting what the verse I just read. "No one knows the day or the hour. No one knows the day or the hour." Well, when we talk about how we should live, we need to live in light of this truth. We don't know when it's going to be, so how are we living? How are we behaving? What are we saying? Are we doing the things that we should be doing? Are we doing the things that we need to be doing? How now shall we live? Now, this verse 36 that I started this with, actually, that whole passage is an answer to a question that the disciples ask. Actually, they ask three questions. In verse 3, I want to read it for us here before we move on. In verse 3, the disciples ask Jesus three questions. And let's look at what these questions are. I'm going to read the verse first. The verse says, "While he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples approached him privately and said, 'Tell us, when will these things happen? What is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?'" So the three questions that they really asked was this. First of all, they ask when. "Can you tell us when this is going to take place?" The second question they ask is, "Can you give us a sign? Can you show us signs so that we know that we're getting close to your coming?" And then the third question they ask was, "What is the sign of the end? When will the world end? What's that going to look like? How do we know when we're getting close to that?" So they're asking three questions, and Jesus responded with the answer of how we should live. He said, "There's some things that you need to keep in mind." These are the three answers that Jesus gave. Number one, we need to know this, that the date is unknown. Regardless of what anybody says, regardless of how many scientific formulas are put out there to show that this is when it's going to happen, the date remains unknown. Verse 36 says, "Now concerning that day and hour, No one knows concerning that day. As a matter of fact, Jesus went on. He said, you know, if you want an example of what it's going to be like, it's going to be like just in the days of Noah, when it was in the days of Noah. In Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 and 6, this is what Genesis 5, 6 says. It says, the Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. I read that verse, and I think that is an amazing statement. The Bible says that God was grieved, and his heart was filled with pain, which goes to show that God is not a cold, uncaring God. He cares about the sin that separates us from him. He grieves over that. He's in pain thinking about how far we are apart from him because of our sin. I think that is an amazing statement, because I know sometimes when we think about the flood, sometimes when we think about the judgment of God, we just don't want to get our mind around that. We don't want to think about that because, man, we want to know God is loving. We want to know God is faithful. We don't think about a God who could very well be a judgment God, a God who could very well look at us in those terms. We don't want to think in that way. But you know what? The flood doesn't show God in that way. God's judgment doesn't show him in this way. The flood shows that God is patient, that God is loving, that God wants people to return to him. He's not out here to zap us at every turn. He wants us to return to him. And I think that is found in the characters that we see in the story of the flood. I want to stay there for just a minute, if you don't mind, because Jesus said it's just like the days of the flood. Well, what were the days of the flood like? I want to ask you a question. I know you know the answer to this question, but who was the oldest person recorded in the Bible? You know the answer to that. You've heard it in Sunday school. I think I even heard a couple of people just all of a sudden say it. You know the answer to that question. The answer is Methuselah. Methuselah is the oldest person in the Bible. Did you ever wonder to yourself, why was Methuselah the oldest person in the Bible? Why was he selected to be the one who held that title? Well, I'll tell you why. It's interesting. Methuselah's dad was a man by the name of Enoch. Enoch was a prophet of God, and when Methuselah was born, he named him Methuselah for this reason. Because Methuselah means, when he is gone, it comes. That's what the name Methuselah means. When he is gone, it comes. Now, history has recorded what that it is, or what that it was. That it was the flood. When Methuselah was gone, the flood came. As a matter of fact, Methuselah lived 969 years. When he died, guess what happened that afternoon? The flood came. It's interesting to break down the years of the people that were involved in Methuselah's life, because if we look at 187 years, 187 years was the age of Methuselah when his son Lamech was born. When Lamech Lamech became father of Noah, when Noah was born, he was 182 years old. When Noah was 600 years old, guess what happened? The flood came. Now, if you add up all those numbers, you're going to get 969 years. 969 years. Now, why is that significant? Because for 969 years, God gave the warning that the flood was coming. Every time somebody called out Methuselah's name, every time somebody looked for Methuselah, every time somebody thought of Methuselah, guess what? God was reminding them, when he's gone, it comes. And over in the New Testament, over and over in the Bible, we see God reminding us over and over again, we don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know the day. We don't know the hour. We don't know the minute. We don't know the second, but it is coming. It is going to happen. Jesus Christ will return, but we don't know the day nor the hour, nor the minute or the second. The day is unknown. But here's the next thing that we see about it, is the return will be unannounced. Verse 43 says, "But know this, if the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed alert." If the homeowner had known what time the thief was coming, he would have stayed alert. It's interesting. Do you know that in journalism, in newsprint, there is a type, there is a font that newspapers use for headlines that are very newsworthy. Headlines that they want to get your attention. This is something very important that happened. There is a type of font that is just for that purpose. Let me give you an example. When Osama bin Laden was caught, the New York Times had this type of font for their headline, online and in print. Bin Laden is dead. They had that one. In the past, we've seen things like this. The Chicago Daily News, when the Hindenburg burned and crashed to the ground, the Chicago Daily News the next day had this as their headline. The headline was, "Hindenburg explodes, burns, fear, 90 killed." That is a type of font that is used for that purpose. You know what it's called? It's called second coming type. Second coming type. And we don't know, it's not going to be announced before it happens, but we do know the day after it happens, the day after Jesus Christ comes for the church, there will be headlines all across the world that will announce that something like this has just taken place. It's not going to be announced previously, but we know it's going to happen. It's just like a thief in the night. A good thief, that's an oxymoron, isn't it? There's no such thing as a good thief, I don't guess. But a thief that is successful in what they do, they get in, slip out, and nobody ever knows. They take your stuff without you knowing. That's really, as I understand thievery, that's really what thieves want to do. I don't know if you've ever been robbed, if you've ever had anything stolen from you. But that's exactly what happened to me. You know, I mean, if I would have known that somebody was going to take that stuff, I would have been there waiting for them. I would have been prepared. And the same is true with us. Jesus is saying, it's just going to be like a thief in the night. We need to be ready. We need to be prepared. And there's a third thing that he says here in his word, and that's this. The process will be selective. I don't know about you, but this gives me chills. When we think about verse 40 says, "Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left." The very next verse says, "Two women will be at the grinding stone, one will stay there and the other will be taken." So that's telling me that it's going to be selective. It's not selective because God has favorites and he's going to just go back and I choose you. It's not selective because God has favorites. It's selective because only certain people are going to put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ. People who don't put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ will not be taken. The process will be selective. So that leaves us with the question that we started with. Knowing all this, how now shall we live? But it leaves me with a question, and that question is this. How now shall we live? 1 John chapter 2, verse 28 says, "So now remain in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming." Think about it. I just would like to know if we could just ask ourselves this question. If Jesus Christ would come right now, within the next 5 to 10 seconds, knowing what we are thinking, knowing what we've been talking about, knowing what we have been doing, would we be confident in his return? Or would we be ashamed in his return? What about in the way that we live between the commas? And what I mean by that is that I know we go through the week, Monday through Friday. I mean, we are just going like crazy. We've got all these activities. We've got everything in school and life and work, all these things that we have going on in our life. It's just full Monday through Friday, isn't it? And we come into Saturday, and it doesn't slow down Saturday. We just do all the things, making up for the things that we couldn't do Monday through Friday. So now we conclude Saturday, and we are just going like crazy Monday through Saturday. But Saturday night, guess what? There's a comma. And we tell ourselves, okay, tomorrow we're going to go to church and we're just going to reset. We are going to unwind. Church is going to be easy. Church is going to be relaxing. Everything's going to be great at church. And then Sunday night, there's another comma. Because we know that tomorrow we're going to go blasting again. But what is life like between the commas? When you go to work tomorrow, when you go to work or go to school tomorrow, when you do the things that you do this week, and the things that you say, and the things that you do that you shouldn't do, and the things that you should do that you haven't been doing, are you ready for Jesus Christ to come? Do we live every moment as if we're ready for Jesus Christ to come? Do we live confident in His return? And I'm going to close with this. Years ago, there was a man by the name of Harry Truman, but not that Harry Truman. It was this Harry Truman. Harry Truman owned a lodge, a resort area called Spirit Lake in the state of Washington. Harry Truman had lived there all of his life. He had operated this. His wife had passed on. He lived now there at Spirit Lake with only his 16 cats. He just took care of the property. He, you know, had tourists in, had people come in and stay, and he just enjoyed life. Well, for several months, geologists had been measuring something in 1980 that was taking place not very far from where Harry Truman was. They had been watching the volcano of Mount St. Helens. And in May of 1980, they began to sense that Mount St. Helens was going to erupt. So they began to tell people all in that area, you need to get away. You need to evacuate. As a matter of fact, signs, electronic signs, were all up and down the roadway, warning, 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 evacuate, get out. Harry Truman would not go. As a matter of fact, when people visited him, Harry Truman's response was, I'm not leaving. Officials came and begged him to leave. His response was, I'm not leaving, and he was given permission to stay there at his home. A news television broadcast came and interviewed Harry in just the days before that event. And this is what Harry said. Harry said, you know what? This mountain is not going to go. He said, nobody knows this mountain better than Harry Truman. I've lived here all my life, and I know this mountain is not going to blow. The very next day, on May 18th, 1980, shortly after, we can only assume that Harry Truman fed his cats, while he's having breakfast at 8:30 in the morning, the top 1,500 feet of Mount St. Helens completely blew apart. It sent a force of 23 megaton nuclear blast down the mountain. Mud and debris went down. It's likely that Harry Truman never heard a thing because this wave of energy that went moved a lot faster than the speed of sound. They never found Harry Truman's remains. They never found the remains of his cats. They never found any evidence of Spirit Lake or that it existed at all because the ash in the aftermath after the explosion was 50 feet deep. 50 feet deep of just the volcanic ash. The only way that we know that Harry Truman was ever there was that his sister, in the weeks following this event, was allowed to go in by helicopter and drop a wreath where it's expected that Spirit Lake was. If you go there to that area today, you will find a trail. And at the bottom of that trail, there is a monument, and it's called Harry's Trail. My best advice for you here this morning is this. Do not follow Harry's trail. Warning after warning has been given. God has said it over and over again. I am coming back. Be ready. Are we living confident in His return? Hey, this is Eddie Duke, pastor at Panther Creek Baptist Church. I hope this message was a blessing for you today. I want to let you know that we here at Panther Creek are a small church that are looking to make a big impact on our neighbors in our community with the love of Christ. If you're looking for a church home with which to serve and connect with, we would love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 for Sunday school and 10:30 for church. We'd also love to have you join us on Sunday evenings at 6:30. But if you can't join us, we hope you'll tune in every week and listen to us. Have a fantastic day.